Welcome to License to Spend with Tim Whistler from the Whistler Agency. Immerse yourself in expert insights on financial strategies that will empower you to confidently navigate your way to retirement freedom. Join us on this journey towards financial confidence. It's time to take control of your financial future.
Well, welcome back to the podcast. Thanks for being here today. Over the years of running my practice, I've always been concerned about having access to resources that can truly help my clients. And without a doubt, one of the best decisions I ever made was requesting to be a member of the Ed Slott Elite IRA Advisor Group a couple of years ago. The resources that are available to me from Ed and his team are truly invaluable because of the fact that they empower me to efficiently and effectively advise my clients when it comes to identifying tax liability in retirement. Joining me as my guest today is Andy Ives, who is an IRA analyst at Ed Slott & Company. Andy has over 20 years of experience in the financial services industry. He holds the CFP and the AIF designations, and he has been such a huge help to me in the time that I've been with the group. Andy, thanks for being here today with me.
Yeah, very happy to be here. Thank you.
It's always so much fun whenever I sit and talk with clients and prospects and I share with them a manual from our workshop, you know, and how thick these things are. And it's just so much fun when I get comments from people, you know, like ranging, I wrote a couple of them down so I wouldn't forget, you know, some people I've heard responses like, you know, goodness, that would put me to sleep. You know, when I talk about two-day IRA workshops,
right.
I've also heard ones where I remember one client specifically saying, I'm glad that you do, so I don't have to. Like, you're very welcome. So right. One of the questions that I had for you as I was thinking about our conversation today is, you know, how do you and the team decide what content should go into that manual for our workshops?
Well, it's funny. The manual that you held up was actually the little one.
Yeah, exactly. It's 250 pages.
Yeah, we do we do three meetings a week, what we call them our two-day training sessions, where advisors come in from across the country and sit down with us for 2 days, and we go through a 400-page manual.
Yeah.
Now, that manual stays pretty constant, you know, the foundational elements of IRAs and retirement plans, stuff like that. But it is dynamic. It is a living, breathing 400-page manual. And, you know, if there's new rules, new notices, new laws, new cases, we'll certainly insert a few things, but then we have to painfully pull some things out. But yeah, whatever's current and what's most appropriate, that's what goes into those big books.
Yeah, I remember the first time I came and saw you guys, I wasn't a part of the group yet. I was just kind of a bystander, if you will. Mm-hmm. But I came to the one in Nashville, I think that was in 2021, something like that. And just blown away by I shared this with you after that event. I just sat there and thought to myself, how much information could I have been using all those years prior to that I did not know and didn't think about, you know, with that conversation. And so anyway, I was just always curious how you guys, you know, come up with the content in those books, because they're so good and the workshops are just incredible.
Yeah, well, I mean, so I mentioned the two-day training manual, that's the 400-pager that doesn't change a whole heck of a lot. You know, we keep it updated periodically. But the one that you held up as a member, you know, we come up with brand new ones, 250-pagers every twice a year.
Yeah.
And you know, sometimes we'll just get a question. Like I once time had a question from someone, how do you divide a Roth IRA and divorce? And I said, I don't know that answer. I don't think there was ever anything written about it. So
right.
Guess what? We created 20 pages of stuff, did all of our research, and that went into the manual. So current items, things that are on, you know, top of mind, what goes into those special manuals that you get.
Gotcha. Perfect. Well, you know, and what I thought we kind of dive a little bit deeper into today is just kind of talk about RMDs, you know, required minimum distributions. You know, as we know, as you and I know, RMDs can impact so many different elements when it comes to retirement income planning. In fact, one thing I'm working on right now is I'm working on a case regarding Irma, you know, with Medicare. We'll talk a little bit about that here in just a second. But, you know, I kind of thought, you know, with so much recent legislative activity from Congress, you know, when the Secure Act came out in 2020 and then the Secure Act 2.0 came out, so much changed in such a short amount of time. So I kind of thought, you know, let's kind of start off our conversation, but let's talk about, you know, what RMDs were waived and how they were adjusted going back to the Secure Act in 2020 and then going up through 2023.
Yeah, there's been a ton of stuff that has happened in the last couple of years. So, and a lot of confusion, and rightfully so. I don't know how a regular person, a person that's not in the know, could handle this stuff. It's impossible. If we go back to 2020, we had the CARES Act. So the coronavirus pandemic was raging. Things, you know, people were lost with a lot of their accounts. They needed to get access to dollars. There was a bunch of things going on. So we had the CARES Act. The CARES Act waived RMDs, required minimum distributions from all accounts in 2020. So if you were a 75-year-old taking a lifetime required minimum distribution from your account, it was waived. If you had an inherited IRA, the RMD was waived. So it basically, across the entire board, waived RMDs. But then people got that in their mind. Hey, RMDs get waived sometimes. Right. It doesn't happen very often, but it was the case in 2020. Fast forward, we've got the Secure Act. We've got Secure 2.0. We've got these new beneficiaries, which we're going to talk about. We've got these new payout rules. One of the payout rules is this 10-year rule applicable to beneficiaries, and we'll get into that. Mm-hmm. But there are situations when within that 10-year period, there are RMDs. But this confusion has persisted from 2020 to 21 to 2022. People that supposedly had RMDs within the 10-year rule weren't taking them. They didn't think they had to. Anyways, end of the day, in 2022 and in 2023, the IRS came out with a couple of notices, 2022-53 and 2023-54 during those 2 years, which basically waived RMDs within the 10-year period only for beneficiaries for 21, 22, and 23. So, Tim, I know you asked about when are RMDs waived. That's a common question. Yep. And people think it's a blanket waiver, and it's not the case. It's very targeted as far as what's waived and what's not. And we're only talking about beneficiaries subject to the 10-year rule that happen to have RMDs in that 10-year period. And those notices, it basically waives the penalty for not taking it. So the RMD technically is not waived, but it means the same thing.
When you talked about sometimes the fees that get assessed if we miss an RMD, talk a little bit about that as well, because I know that sometimes that catches people off guard thinking, oh boy, if I miss something, you know, the penalty used to be X, now it's Y. Kind of talk through that a little bit as well.
Yeah. So if you miss an RMD, it was used to be one of the stiffest penalties around. It was 50% of whatever you didn't take. So if right. you had a $2,000 RMD and you missed it, you're looking at a $1,000 penalty potentially. Now there's some ways to go about requesting a waiver, and we know that those waiver requests were pretty successful. So there's ways around it, but it's still a big penalty, and it makes people nervous when they see that. That penalty has subsequently been reduced to 25% of what was not missed and can be further reduced from there. But the waiver still exists. If you have an RMD, you certainly want to take it. That's why people get nervous when they see these waivers. They're not sure if it applies to them or not. And if they do miss it, you're looking at a potential problem. But again, there are protocols in place, and certainly anybody can talk to you, Tim, and figure out what those protocols are as far as the forms you have to fill out. It seems to be very successful as far as getting that waiver, but you need to take those RMDs. If RMDs apply to you and you're not part of that 10-year waiver period, you got to get those out before the end of the calendar year.
Yep. Before I'm kind of changing here a little bit from what we talked about, but since you talked about that, about the 10-year, let's kind of go into that right now. I think that's a good segue into that next. What does that 10-year window look like? Because I think before the Secure Act came out, most people had in their minds, they had the stretch IRA type of thing. Now, all of a sudden, those rules changed. So kind of elaborate a little bit more on that 10-year rule.
Yeah, it's a good question. And it's basically, it's a multifaceted answer. So you're right. Prior to the Secure Act, that became effective in 2020. Prior to the Secure Act, if you were a beneficiary, if you're a living, breathing person, and you inherited an IRA, you know, from your uncle or from a parent or what have you, you were allowed to what we called stretch payments. You could take annual RMD payments based on your own single life expectancy. You know, if you're a young person, you could maybe stretch it out for 40, 50, 60 years. You didn't have to take anything out of the account except for what would be a small RMD. That all changed with the Secure Act. The Secure Act created a number of different classes of beneficiaries. And I'm getting to the 10-year rule. I promise you I'm getting to the 10-year rule here. The Secure Act created a number of different classes of beneficiaries that they called EDBs, or eligible designated beneficiaries. So it was only these EDBs that were allowed to, after Secure, take these stretch payments, these stretch RMD payments. If a spouse, it's a minor child of the account owner, so you can't just name your grandkid, disabled folks, chronically ill, and those people not more than 10 years younger than the IRA owner. So we've got this group of five different classes of beneficiaries that can still do the stretch RMD payment. everybody else, if you can't fit into one of those five groups, you get the 10-year rule. And basically the 10-year rule is just that. It says when a person dies, you have as a beneficiary 10 years to empty the account. At the end of those 10 years, whatever's left has to come out of the account. Now, the next question that I know you're going to ask, and I don't want to step on your toes here, but it is, okay, what about RMDs within the 10-year? And this is the confusing part. And this is where people get sideways with the rules. So if I don't fit one of those five classes and I'm stuck with this 10-year rule, the next question is, do I take annual RMDs during the 10 years in years 1 through 9, or do I not? That is based on the age of the deceased individual. So the first person who owned the account, if they were under 70 and a half, 72, 73, whatever the RMD age was, they call it required beginning date, when you have to start taking lifetime RMDs off your account. If you don't get to that required beginning date when RMDs basically click on, so you died prior to that date, then no RMDs apply within the 10-year period. I like to say that if RMDs were turned on, you have to keep taking them. If they were not turned on, you don't. So in a situation where RMDs were not turned on by the first IRA owner, they don't apply in years 1 through 9 or in the 10-year period. If that person was older, maybe they were 75, 76, and they passed away, they were taking lifetime RMDs, which means that RMDs would apply to the beneficiary in years 1 through 9 of the 10-year period. So again, the easiest way to remember it, were RMDs turned on, can't turn them off, they apply in the 10-year period. If they were not turned on, then you don't have to worry about them within the 10-year period.
One of the things that I, you know, as I came into the intro of our conversation today and just kind of elaborated on how it's empowered myself and my practice, you know, the amount of resources that we have and how you guys break things down. It was so good. We were talking off camera, Andy, before we turned everything on. And just whenever I engage in a conversation with somebody, especially when, hey, I inherited an IRA from dad or mom, you know, whatever the case may be, you know, how does that pertain to me, or how will that pertain to me if I inherit something from mom or dad? Now I know how to walk them through that dialogue. Okay, you know, if how old, you know, are they right now? Are they taking RMDs? That type of thing. Because again, we don't want to miss the RMD and mess things up. But at the same time, we also want to understand, is there an RMD required? And if not, so I think the checklist that you guys give us as advisors to walk a client through is vital. So that way, then the client can be aware of it, but it's something they don't have to fully memorize, if you will.
Exactly. I've had advisors call me with clients on the phone and say, let's talk through this. And I'm like, all right, I'm actually talking to an end user now. So I have to really slow things down, get very basic, but I still have to explain what's going on. So you got to, I know your pain when you have to walk through the variables of how old was the person when they passed away? What type of account was it? Was it a traditional IRA or Roth IRA?
Right.
Who is the beneficiary, the relationship there? How old is that person? So there's all these different things. We have to check these boxes, and ultimately we will have an answer. At the end of the rainbow, there is an answer, but right, you got to get through all that stuff first.
It's exactly right. You know, we talk so much about the importance of creating tax-free income, mm-hmm, right? There's still going to be some rules set in there. Obviously we know there's vehicles out there, but you know, let's just kind of elaborate in our conversation today as far as using one of those vehicles that most people are aware of, the Roth IRA. You know, the Roth IRA is funded with after-tax contributions if we qualify, or conversions from traditional IRAs or SEP IRAs, et cetera, however you want to do that. So I would say, Andy, what should folks know and understand about RMDs when it comes to inherited Roth IRAs, and also maybe talk to you about their own Roth IRAs and how RMDs play into that?
Yeah, that's this is a majorly confusing situation to a lot of different people. And I hear people say stuff as confidently as they can, and it's totally wrong because it depends. A lot of things I say, it depends. You know, if you ask me, are there RMDs, required minimum distributions, on an inherited Roth IRA? And my answer is, it depends. And that's it. And that's the perfect answer. Right. Here's what I mean by that. If a person fits into one of those five categories that I talked about, an EDB, eligible designated beneficiary, again, spouse, minor child of the account owner, disabled, chronically ill, or not more than 10 years younger. That's a sneaky one, not more than 10 years younger. If you fit into one of those categories, then you have a choice. If let's say A friend of mine passes away and leaves me a Roth IRA, and I'm not more than 10 years younger than that person, I qualify as an EDB. So I have a choice. I can choose a lifetime stretch. So RMDs off of that inherited Roth IRA, lifetime stretch based on my own single life expectancy. That's one of my options. Another option is I can choose the 10-year rule with no annual RMDs in years 1 through 9. So that's a pretty important decision, I think, because you spread out tax-free growth over 30 or 40 years, but you have to take a little bit each year. Or some people will say, you know what? I'm not going to touch it for 10 years. I'm going to take the whole thing at the end of that decade based on as a tax-free payment. Here's where, again, we get into these variables. And you asked about Roth IRA owners when they're alive. When you have a Roth IRA, when I just have my normal Roth IRA, I'm not talking about an inherited account. I do not have a required minimum distribution on that account. So I can be 95 years old and have this Roth IRA for 20 years, and I do not have to take a required minimum distribution. I don't have to worry about it because I don't have a lifetime required minimum distribution. I am always deemed, the Roth IRA owner is deemed when they pass away to die before that required beginning date that I talked about when RMDs turn on. So since a Roth IRA owner during life is deemed to die before the required beginning date, that's where we get into the situation where if the beneficiary has the 10-year rule, remember what I said, if RMDs are turned on, they can't be turned off. If they're not turned on, if they're not turned on, they don't get turned on by the beneficiary. Same thing in the 10-year rule. If I don't qualify as one of those EDBs that can stretch payments and I'm stuck with the 10-year rule on a Roth, inherited Roth IRA, doesn't matter how old that person was when they died, the original owner, they were not taking lifetime RMDs. So they weren't turned on, which means I do not have RMDs in that 10-year period. So once again, a couple of variables to think about when it comes to inherited Roth accounts.
Exactly. And that's where, you know, for an advisor engaging in a conversation with somebody when they're like, okay, Tim, here's our age. This is what we have. How do we create income from this? And that's what Andy, you and the team have been so good at just helping us with is saying, once we understand the facts, the assets, who owns them, what's the tax classification, how old are they, then we can start creating that income stream knowing that, hey, this is required. This isn't. This is taxable. This is tax-free. Yep. Like you said before, how on earth does somebody do this on their own? And there's times I'm like, how am I doing this as an advisor? I got to get my manual out.
I know. And I will say one thing. So let's just say hypothetically that we go through this, you know, this maze of possible options, and we identify that, okay, we've got a traditional IRA, and we know that the person had died and RMDs were turned on during life. So, you know, we've got the beneficiary, and it turns out that this beneficiary has the 10-year rule, and we know that they have RMDs in years 1 through 9. Okay, so we figured out what their payout structure is, but then we find out that, hey, RMDs within the 10-year period were waived for 21, 22, 23. Some people are like, that's awesome. I don't want to take it. But then an advisor like you, a smart person like you, will say, listen, let's not compress all this money into the last couple of years. Maybe even though they're waived, maybe we should take it a little bit to help soften the tax blow and spread it out a little bit. Again, wise planning on your part.
Well, I'm learning from the best, my friend. I appreciate the edification, but that is something that just comes to my mind all the time, especially when it comes to this time of year. We're starting to get our statements coming in. People are starting to think about getting their taxes prepared. It's at the top of my mind 12 months of the year anyway. But I just think for an overall income plan, those RMDs are so important for us to understand that they exist, how they exist, and how they can affect things. We're not going to talk about it today, but I think you and I could do an entire episode just on IRMAs with Medicare.
Yeah.
That thing, holy smokes. Did you know, Andy, there's actually a certification that advisors can get for IRMA?
I didn't know that, but I'm not surprised because it is a convoluted mess.
Yeah, it's great. I literally learned about that less than 24 hours ago. So earlier this morning, I went ahead and went online and subscribed to that. I'm going to add that as another designation just for the fact of, you know, being a Medicare broker and having that knowledge and understanding about how, you know, their Medicare premiums, Part B and Part D, are affected with income. And then you combine that with RMDs. I got somebody that's 66, 60, you know, 65 with Medicare eligibility, not having to take an RMD until 73, maybe 75, depending upon, you know, again, where that's at. That tax liability is just swelling up. And it's almost like our deficit. You know, what are we at now? Past $34 trillion, something outrageous like that.
I may be calling you with armor questions after you go through your course.
That's all right. We can do that, man. But I appreciate that. I think that's so good for us to understand, you know, how the RMDs work. And again, when they come into to play, whenever I'm engaging with conversations with people and I'm hearing their concerns, their ideas, their goals, what they want to do as far as retirement, if they don't bring it up, I will always ask, okay, what's your legacy plan? We're all going to leave a legacy. Is it planned? Is it just whatever's left over, whatever the case may be? And who's going to be the recipient of funds? Are we going to send some to a charitable organization? We're going to leave some to the kids and grandkids. Let's kind of talk a little bit. I know you've really got, you kind of hit the surface with NDBs and NEDBs and EDBs, all those acronyms of beneficiaries. But let's just kind of talk about, again, just maybe bring up an example or two as far as, you know, maybe leaving some funds behind for maybe some adult children that are going to come to them, maybe from our own 401k or traditional IRA.
I certainly think it's wise to check your beneficiary forms annually. That's one of the things that we preach, check beneficiary forms. It's the easiest thing to do. We always joke that the beneficiary form is it's like the little kid on the basketball court that gets picked last. You know, he's got the beat up sneakers on and nobody wants him on their team, but that kid is Michael Jordan. So, that's the beneficiary form. It gets no respect. But if we can evaluate the beneficiaries and understand what their payout rules are, can this person do a lifetime stretch? Does this person get the 10-year rule? Is it better for me to leave the Roth IRA to this person or the traditional IRA to this person? There's a bunch of different planning ideas in there. And I'll give you an example of something where a person thought that they had done everything perfectly. And it was a very common situation, but it was amazing the convoluted result that came. So we talked about the people that get the 10-year rule, become the non-EDBs, the EDBs that can do the lifetime stretch. There is another class of beneficiaries, and you alluded to it, which is that non-designated beneficiary, which I call a non-person. That's how I think it, keep it straight in my head, is a non-person. An estate is a non-person. So I'm assuming that when you check beneficiary forms, and if you see an estate, that's a bit of a red flag. You want to name a person directly because there's different payout rules and different structures that are more beneficial, potentially. So here's a true story, real life example of a gentleman. I think he was like 75 years old. He had three IRAs, very common. He had a traditional IRA, he had a Roth IRA, and he had an inherited IRA from, I don't know, maybe his brother or something like that. So not uncommon, very, very common situation where a person probably has these three different types of IRAs. He passed away, and when the advisor looked at his account and the beneficiary forms, he saw that he had named the estate as the beneficiary for each one of those three accounts. So traditional IRA goes to the estate, Roth IRA goes to the estate, inherited IRA goes to the estate. And he wanted to walk through the different payout structures. We did it. And I was, as a person who's been in this business for a long time, I was astounded. Three different accounts, all with the same beneficiary, three completely different payout structures. So let's look at we'll take the Roth IRA first. So this gentleman was 75 years old. I said earlier that it doesn't matter how old you are, you're deemed to die before your required beginning date. So he wasn't taking lifetime RMDs. So it goes to the estate. We know that the estate is a non-designated beneficiary. So we have two different options here. The 10-year rule is not on the table. We have something called the 5-year rule or the ghost rule. And again, this is only applicable to non-person beneficiaries. If a person dies before the required beginning date with a non-person beneficiary, you get the 5-year payout rule. So the Roth IRA, because it was the estate beneficiary, was subject to a 5-year payout. Mm-hmm. Let's look at the traditional IRA. This gentleman had the traditional IRA. He was 75. He was taking lifetime required minimum distributions. So it means he died after his required beginning date. Then we have something called the ghost rule, which means if you have a non-person beneficiary, his estate, the payout structure is based on the single life expectancy of the deceased individual. So while the Roth IRA had a 5-year payout rule, the traditional IRA had what turned out to be, I think, like a 13-year payout structure, annual RMDs, two different payouts. Now we have the inherited IRA. His inherited IRA was obviously already an inherited IRA. The estate was considered a successor beneficiary because it was one beneficiary going to the next beneficiary. Under the Secure Act, a successor always gets the 10-year rule. Okay. So the estate got the 10-year rule. In my mind, totally ludicrous. three accounts owned by the same person with the same beneficiary, three different payouts, 5-year rule, ghost rule, and the 10-year rule. From a planning perspective, you can certainly make things easier for your beneficiaries by naming them directly, understanding what they're allowed to do, and filling out the beneficiary form appropriately. A lot of times you'll see like a grandparent that has named a grandchild for many, many years has been the beneficiary on their account. They expect that grandchild to be able to do like a 50-year stretch of their IRA. That's not the case anymore. If they filled out that beneficiary form prior to the Secure Act, they need to revisit it because the payout rules have changed.
No, that's a great point, Andy. I think that is so important for us to understand as we share this and people are listening in, that we set our trust up, you know, maybe I'm saying we in general terms, somebody may have set their trust up 15, 20 years ago, every T was crossed, I was dotted. Now the Secure Act came in, just completely changed everything. And as you and I both know, hearing Ed speak all the time, we need to revisit that and go back to the beneficiaries and look at that.
Important. Yeah, we haven't even talked about trust. You can do a multi-day program on trust IRA, trust as IRA beneficiaries. But that's another one. I mean, you have a trust account. I'll jump on this one real quick and tell my little story that I always say. You know, if you have, let's say, a gambling addicted child, I've got this $1 million IRA. I don't want to give it to him directly. So I put a trust in place to protect him from taking all that money. And I can sleep well knowing that, again, prior to the Secure Act, the trust says he can only take his required minimum distribution annually. That's perfect. I feel all good about that. But then the Secure Act passes and this whole 10-year rule thing comes into play. But I don't update my trust. The language still says to pay out my gambling addicted child only the RMD, which is supposed to pay to him annually. But now the Secure Act passes. We have the 10-year rule. Right. And let's say I pass away when I'm 65. So I was not taking lifetime RMDs. They were not turned on. This son of mine who likes to gamble gets the 10-year rule with no annual RMDs because I died early. The trust still says only pay out the RMD. So now I pass away. We follow exactly what the trust says. And it says pay out nothing but the RMD. The son just sits there and nothing pays out. And at the end of the 10 years, whatever's left in that account is considered the RMD. So he gets a full lump sum payout, which is exactly what I was trying to avoid. So again, another good example, Tim, for sure, as far as checking beneficiary forms, evaluating who the beneficiary is, and understanding what the ramifications are of what happens when you name a certain person or entity as your beneficiary.
Absolutely. And I tell you what, it's amazing how quickly our time passes. And I certainly don't want to cut a good conversation short, but we're kind of at that deadline. So Andy, I appreciate your time. And I tell you what, it's what's fun for those of you who are listening or watching, as you can imagine, a room full of what Andy, 200 advisors at a time, 250, something like that. And we're going through this content. That conversation is pretty dynamic, isn't it?
It can get hot.
It really does.
If you say the wrong thing or if you push the wrong button. And then I like to just kind of throw a grenade out there and just sit back and watch people debate.
Right. Then turn it over to Ed. Let him finish.
That's right. And I'll sneak off the stage.
That's right. Well, again, my friend Andy, it's so good to have you here. I appreciate you carving out some time to be a guest on my podcast today. Thanks for sharing this content. If you don't mind, I'd love to have you back again sometime.
Anytime. I enjoyed it. Appreciate it.
Appreciate it, Andy. Thank you very much. So again, folks, the act of retirement is quite simple. You just simply stop working. But the science of retirement can be complex and it can be very confusing, as we've just alluded to, just with talking about the tip of the iceberg, but just with RMDs. And you know, that confusion can lead to frustration, which can lead to some mistakes. We don't want to engage in mistakes when it comes to the milestone of retirement. You know, you work for decades to save during those accumulation years, and now you want to be prepared for the distribution years. So, you know, take some time. Let's have a conversation. You know, you can reach me by phone. Our phone number is 309-291-0491. You can shoot me an email, which is tim@thewhistleragency.com. And again, there's still no T in Whistler. You can certainly go to our website as well. So I hope this was helpful for you as you kind of look through your statements and your assets, your IRAs, and try to understand how do you create income from the assets. Thanks so much for being here. We'll see you again next time.
Thank you for listening to License to Spend. Click the follow button to be notified when new episodes become available. The views expressed herein reflect the views of the Whistler Agency. As of the date of publication, these views may change as conditions change. The views expressed herein are not intended and should not be construed as investment advice, and they do not address any individual's specific situation. The information covered and posted represents the views and opinions of the guest and does not necessarily represent the views or opinions of the Whistler Agency. The content has been made available for informational and educational purposes only. The content is not intended to be a substitute for professional investing advice. Always seek the advice of your financial advisor or other qualified financial service provider with any questions you may have regarding your investment planning. Investment advisory and financial planning services are offered through Foundations Investment Advisors, LLC, an SEC-registered investment advisor. Insurance, consulting, and education services are offered through the Whistler Agency. The Whistler Agency is a separate and unaffiliated entity from Foundations Investment Advisors, LLC. This podcast is designed to provide general information on subjects covered pursuant to IRS Circular 230. It is not intended to provide specific legal or tax advice and cannot be used to avoid penalties or to promote, market, or recommend any tax plan or arrangement for insurance products discussed, guarantees, or backed by the financial strength and claims-paying ability of the issuing insurance company.